You're listening to the BBS Radio Network, and this is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud, healer, author, shaman, paranormal investigator. Stay tuned. Up next is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud.
Dot, women here. I'm in this mistake here. MachiefMetisMuseum.ning.com. Now, this website is all about it's a blog page, a place you can actually talk about yourself. You can put pictures in there, you can put videos in there, music, all to do with Métis culture. And anyone, if you only want to be chatting back and forth, maybe to cousins or friends that you haven't heard from in a long time, or if you want to share information regarding where you are living and what you are doing in your territory, we'd love to hear from you. And we are having a great time here this evening because this is going to be something totally different out of the blue. Tonight, later on the show, I will be talking about Residents of School Recovery Program because I actually am one of the elders in this program. Last week we did have our Prime Minister Harper, who did apologize from the federal government that they did willfully cause due damage to our people in the past, with not just the Métis, but all the First Nations, and some of you out there that are North American natives, you don't use the word First Nations, where you're actually called North American Indians. Well, we all in this whole native lifestyle, we all went through residential school recovery. We actually, this time in Canada, for the very first time, and the United States has not had the apology yet, but in Canada we have been apologized by the federal government, saying there was willful damage and there was a lot of abuse to these children and residents of schools. And tonight we're going to be talking about it a little bit later on, but tonight, what I want to talk about first is welcome my best friend Dale Haggerty. Tonti, my friend.
And say, how are you doing, Derek?
Good.
Congratulations on your election of being an elder.
Yeah, thank you.
You are a spokesman and a good friend, and I congratulate you on your new adventure of to try to help the healing of our Aboriginal people that need the help that they're going to go through this reconciliation through the residential system.
Yeah, this is all to do with the Indian Residential Survivor Society.
Yeah,
which are called the IRSSS Elders Committee or Elders Council. We go through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But before we start that, I want to find out what's happening in the Métis community lately. Now, you're up in Baby, British Columbia, which I know where you live. What's going on in your territory? What are the new projects? We've got July coming up quite soon, and I know there's got to be some great events happening for the Métis community. And what is happening in your territory? What have you been doing?
Well, right last week was our National Aboriginal Day, and I took the newly required Red River cart to the the Vavenby Elementary School here in downtown Vavenby, and the kids were quite impressed with the history of our cart, and it's a replica, but it's like I don't think we'd really do have an original, except for maybe in the museums of man in Ottawa, there might be the odd Red River cart there, and in Manitoba as well. But anyways, it was a good successful class. I put on two classes for the elementary kids, and told them what the purpose of the Red River cart was, and I really enjoyed this. Of course, afterwards I had to play them one of the games that it's that our history is of our elders and our families used to teach. This game where you would tie, you would get four people or even eight people, and you would tie their feet to a 2x4 or a 1x4, and you'd have to learn to walk together and in coordination. And the reasonings for this is it wasn't just only a game for the kids; it was also to teach them how to use snowshoes and stuff like this, as well as working together as a team sort of thing, and in their family life sort of thing. So that was a lot of fun, because there was a group of four kids there that they just caught on to this left, right, left, right, left, right, and they were walking all over the place. Matter of fact, I think they were trying to escape out of the schoolyard before the principal had called them back. So that was a little bit hilarious. So that was on a Tuesday, and then on a Saturday we also had our National Aboriginal Day, which was the day. And my wife, I took my family, my mom and my sister and my niece, and we went to the Clearwater Yellowhead Resource Center, and of course they were the sponsors of the Success by Six. They were the sponsors for the National Aboriginal Day, and we set up the teepee, and I set up a small display of sashes, and the Red River cart was there, and lots of singing, and I did a demonstration of traditional finger weaving, and they had hot dogs going on, and of course they had a real nice potluck with salmon and buffalo stew and bannock and you name it, it was there. But that's what's been happening the last two that last week here. And
because we had Aboriginal week, that was for the June 21st.
That was June 21st. Yeah, that was the hey. I had to. It had started to rain here, and it started to rain just at the end. So I had to knock the teepee down wet, and then and that Saturday that it rained, I took it out here on, set it up in the grounds in Vavenby, and let it dry out. So that was pretty good. So we had a nice day on Sunday. So
did you get soaked?
No, actually, the actual event was it was over. The event was over, and the rain started coming. So it was a blessing in disguise. Our ancestors looked after us while we were there, and it was a lot of fun. My mom really enjoyed it, and so did the family. And really nice.
When's the last time your mom has ever been to an event like this?
I think the last time my mom went to an event was in when we were in Surrey, and it was at the Louis Riel Elders Dinner, and I think that was in 2003 or 2002.
Okay.
And that was when we had that very large crowd, about 400 people attend there. So that was the last time my mom has ever gone to an event with me, and and of course, I don't know what we're doing July 1st. We've been invited to go down to Clearwater again and set up the teepee, and I think we're going to, there's one lady friend of ours, she's going to put on some hot dogs and put the flags out there and have a Canada Day celebration as well. So,
wow.
Yeah, and of course, later on, Dale and I are we're taking the Red River cart and the teepee down to Alberta to visit our sister museums. We've got one in St. Albert's, just outside of Edmonton, and of course that's the important one. She's my mom's first cousin, and then of course then we're going to go to a Métis rendezvous and again, we're taking the cart and the teepee, and we're going to Delia, which is just outside of Drumheller, about 56 kilometers. It was about 36 miles, and we're going to have a weekend event there. And of course, I'll be probably putting on the play that I wrote with my wife and daughter. So that'll be a lot of fun. So. Yeah,
I was there with you last year.
Yeah, it was quite a thing there. I wrote another one. When I sort of write a play, it's all I just take a segment of history and sort of put my own words in stuff like into it. So it's a lot of fun. So you can improvise by saying things that you know that if they said that you don't really. Nobody can contradict you because you don't know what they said. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of pun stuff out there. So you can do a lot of changing words and making people really think. So there you go, Derek. So
cool.
So, yeah. So, and of course, you know, you, my good friend here, got me started on the radio program, which is... Yeah, and it's been quite exciting. I've had probably seven guests already, and we've talked about just Métis life, hunting. I have two captains of the hunt. I've talked about the political venue of. Our senator Thelma Shalafu, when she was on the when she was a senator in the federal government, talking about that, and of course family life of that, and of course it's been a lot, but just recently it's just this residential school has hit a sore spot in my my life right now, and because I am dealing with it, and even though that my mom has, you know, accepted the apology, I'm really having a difficult time accepting the apology. I mean, because I don't think that we have enough people out there to help, because I'm not a residential person, but I'm a family member that I think that people keep forgetting that it has not just affected just the residential person himself that has attended the school, but how it has reflected their lives growing up after the fact and having a family and the domino effect that it has occurred with people. And
well, before I go any further, Dale, on that one, let me read from the apology. Okay? This actually was written from the National Post.
Yeah.
The prepared text of the apology of Prime Minister Stephen Harper delivered in the House of Commons on Wednesday, paragraphs in parentheses were spoken in French. Mr. Speaker, I stand before you today to offer an apology to former students of Indian residential schools. The treatment of children in Indian residential schools is a sad chapter in our history. For over a century, the residential schools separated over 150,000 Native children, 150,000 Native children, from their families and communities. In the 1870s, the federal government, partly in order to meet its obligation to educate Aboriginal children, began to play a role in the development and administration of these schools. Two primary objectives of the original school system were to remove and isolate children from the influence of their homes, families, traditions, and cultures, and to assimilate them in the dominant culture. These objectives were based on the assumption Aboriginal cultures and spiritual beliefs were inferior and unequal. Indeed, some sought, as it was and infamously said, to kill the Indian in the child. Today we recognize that this policy of assimilation was wrong, has caused great harm, and has no place in our country. 132 schools financed by the federal government were located in all provinces and territories, with the exception of Newfoundland, New Brunswick, and PEI, which I don't believe that because my grandmother was in Nova Scotia. Most schools were operated as joint ventures with Anglican, Catholic, Presbyterian, or United Churches. The Government of Canada built an educational system in which very young children were often forcibly removed from their homes, often taken far from their communities. Many were inadequately fed, clothed, and housed. All were deprived of the care and nurturing of their parents, grandparents, and communities. First Nations, Inuit, and Métis languages and cultural practices were prohibited in these schools. Tragically, some of these children died after attending residential schools and others never returned home. The government now recognizes that the consequences of the Indian residential schools policy were profoundly negative and that this policy has had a lasting and damaging impact on Aboriginal culture, heritage, and language. With some former students have spoken positively about their experiences at residential schools, these stories are far overshadowed by tragic accounts of the emotional, physical, and sexual abuse and neglect of helpless children and their separation from powerless families and communities. The legacy of Indian residential schools has contributed to social problems that continue to exist in many communities today. It has taken extraordinary courage for thousands of survivors that have come forward to speak publicly about the abuse they suffered. It is a testament to their resilience as individuals and to the strength of their cultures. Regrettably, many former students are not with us today and died, never having received a full apology from the Government of Canada. The government recognizes that the absence of an apology has been an impediment to healing and reconciliation. Therefore, on behalf of the Government of Canada and all Canadians, I stand before you in this chamber, June the 1st, 2008, in this chamber so central to our country, our life as a country, to apologize to Aboriginal peoples for Canada's role in the Indian residential school system. To the approximately 80,000 plus living former students and all family members and communities, the Government of Canada now recognizes that it was wrong to forcibly remove children from their homes, and we apologize for having this done. We now recognize that this was wrong to separate children from rich and vibrant cultures and traditions, that it created a void in many lives and communities, and we apologize for having this done. We now recognize that in separating children from their families, we undermine the ability of many to adequately parent their own children and sow the seeds for generations to follow. And we apologize for having done this. We now recognize that too often these institutions gave rise to abuse or neglect that were inadequately controlled, and we apologize for failing to protect you. Not only did you suffer these abuses as children, but as you became parents, you were powerless to protect your own children from suffering the same experience, and for this, we are sorry. The burden of this experience has been on your shoulders so far too long, and the burden is properly ours as a government and as a country. There is no place in Canada for the attitudes that inspired the Indian residential school system to ever again prevail. You have been working on recovering from this experience for a long time, and in a real sense, we now are joining you on this journey. The Government of Canada sincerely apologizes and asks the forgiveness of the Aboriginal peoples from this country for failing them so profoundly. We are sorry in moving towards healing, reconciliation, and resolution of the sad legacy of Indian residential schools. Implementation of the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement began on September 19, 2007. Years of work by survivors, communities, and Aboriginal organizations culminated in an agreement that gives us a new beginning, an opportunity to move forward together in partnership. A cornerstone of the settlement agreement is the Indian Residential Schools Truth and Reconciliation Commission. This commission presents a unique opportunity to educate all Canadians on the Indian residential school system. It will be a positive step in forging a new relationship between Aboriginal peoples and other Canadians, a relationship based on the knowledge of our shared history, a respect for each other, and a desire to move forward together with a renewed understanding that strong families, strong communities, and vibrant cultures and traditions will contribute to a stronger Canada for all of us. Now, that's signed our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper. And other politicians also sat in the Commons and also spoke. In return, the other Aboriginal people that were in that circle also accepted the apology in our Commons, the government Commons. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this is not going to be a healing moment right now. Part of it is, not all of it. There's too much to take on all at once, and it's going to take time for this healing to take place because there are people out there that still have suffered and are not done yet. But it's going to take time for that healing to take place. And what I'm sharing with you today, from myself as Derek White Skycloud, I am a proud Métis. I am also been part of residential school, but I did not go through the hardship as most people did. Mine was very brief when I found out I was Aboriginal. But there are people like that out there. Dale's mother, Dale Haggerty's mother, went through it. Families through her, his mother, have also suffered. They went through the suffering because they also felt guilty that they could not do nothing about it. This is before they're even born. But what I want to share with my best friend, that let him know that I understand where he's coming from. And this is important. And all of you out there today that are listening to this show, and understand that Canada, yes, has apologized. United States has not, for their own people. So I consider this that we are very fortunate that our country is recognizing the things that have happened to our people. And I'm hoping that the United States will also open up their eyes and ears and listen and do the same thing for their people in the U.S. Because both countries have suffered. All tribes have suffered. There are over 600 tribes in Canada here. They've offered over $600 million to share amongst everyone. You divide $600 million, sorry, take it back. You divide $60 million into 600. That gives you what's left between all those tribes. So we're still working together as a nation. And also to also let all those folks out there that are non-Native. We don't hate you. We understand that you understand us. Because there are a lot of people out there today that are non-Native that actually have been to my healing circles and have actually said to me that they apologize for what had happened in the past. This long before the Canadian government even stepped in. Because the Canadian government was very afraid to know that there actually was a chance that there could have been, the government could have been actually illegally sued. A lot of money could have been could have done a lot of damage to our own federal government. So this way here, this program was put together, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, was to help others that are still going through the program that I am involved in. And having my best friend on tonight is going to help him and his family and others. It won't be immediate answers. Immediate healing. But to let him know, let Dale know, it's going to take time. We could be angry because the Métis also suffered. They also went to residential schools. Even the non-native kids, there were some of the kids that are non-native were also put into residential schools. And they suffered as well because they lived on reserves because they chose that with their family. So these things do happen and did happen. Those of you out there may not have known about it now or even in the past, but now it's time to know your Canadian history, the real truth of it. There was an assimilation to separate the native from the non-native. And there was a genocide. And we need to stop this. Like the Jews that dealt with the same similar way, it's time to heal. And it's going to take years. Not just minutes, not just days, not just months.
Derek, if there's a chance here, I'd like to read you the little bit of a history of what happened to my mom, and then you'll understand where I'm coming from, and it's an opening of old wounds, as we say, and I'd like to read this because this is how what we had submitted to the committee, residential school committee.
Go ahead, my friend.
You mind if I read it?
Go right ahead. Before you start, Dale, I want to welcome the Pal Talk chat room. I also like to welcome the BBS Radio chat room and those listeners that are listening in. Also, those who are listening in to the Ustream.tv. Go right ahead, Dale.
Yeah. This is a story that my mom had wrote down and we sort of translated it. My mother had passed away February 1932. I was 11 years old. Dad came home and moved us kids to Archwell, Saskatchewan. I was there till I was 15 years old. The government social worker from Regina, Miss Switzer, came and took me and my sisters and brothers away to a foster home in Saskatoon. In 1935, on my 15th birthday, I was fostered for 2.5 years. Sorry, I was fostered for 2.5 months. Then I was sent to Montmere, Saskatchewan. I was working for a family wasn't being paid. I guess I was working for my keep. I was there till 1939. I worked for four years on that farm, and the boss always tried to abuse me sexually. I was trying to get away, but I couldn't because I had to report to the government. I didn't tell anybody about the abuse. I was afraid. Excuse me.
Take a deep breath, my friend.
The last place I worked for was the people in North Pathanford. Short time until I was sent in 1939 in the winter time to the Sisters of the Good Shepherd School. Home, a reform school, a place for bad kids. I was put there for no reason. I wasn't bad. I always worked hard, spent 2.5 years in that school. I was not allowed to speak my own language, French, Métis, only English. They were very strict and mentally abusive. I wasn't allowed to see my brothers or sisters. They scattered us kids. We were in different places. I couldn't find them till many years later. and only my sisters. I remained at the Good Shepherd School Reform School until I was 21, and I was released in 1942 in the springtime. When the war had just about over, I had been still looking after the government authorities until I could find work and take care of myself. To this day, I have not seen my brother since he was taken away in 1935. My three sisters are now passed away. The authorities have never given me an explanation of why they separated my family or held me in reform school and reform school, destroying my family life. The government of Saskatchewan has never apologized for what they did to my family. And if they did, they would have to admit that they would have to admit their guilt. I feel that they discriminated against us because we are of our Métis heritage. Regina Haggerty, as per Dale R. Haggerty. And that's the story.
Thank you, Dale, for sharing that.
And it's really hard because, like my mom said, she doesn't know. She had a contact about 10 or maybe 12 years ago, maybe even longer than that, to talk to her brother. And then she has lost contact, and she's never seen him at all. She's just had a couple pictures mailed to him earlier, and that was about it, the family pictures. And now my mom and my uncle, if he's still around, because we don't know if he's on this earth plane, is the last of the Villeneuve family. And I'm not going to accept the apology until the day that they try to get them together.
Dale?
Yes.
I think we have a caller calling in.
Go for it.
Hello?
We have a caller calling in?
Yes.
Yes?
My name is Heather, and I have a question.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to move out of where I live, and I was wondering if you could tell me.
Okay. Tonight, we're not doing readings, my dear.
Oh, you're not?
Not tonight, no. We're doing another show. I'm interviewing Dale Haggerty regarding our residential school recovery program.
Okay.
Have you ever heard about that?
No, I haven't. I'm in California.
Okay. Do you know that the United States never really apologized to the First Nations people there for the abuse in residential school?
I'm not surprised. No, I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, in Canada, we just had our apology that took place June the 1st.
Wow. Awesome.
And the federal government apologized to all the First Nations and all the Métis, the half-breeds, so to speak.
Right, right.
All across Canada. So we're talking about this program. If
wow.
you want to give me a call either after the show, or you can actually email me, or you can wait till next following week, next Tuesday.
Where would I email you at or call you at?
I'm under whiteskycloud@yahoo.com.
And that's where I would email you. And to call you, what would I do?
Just go to my website, whiteskycloud.com, and you'll find the phone number.
Oh, okay. Great. Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, actually, if anybody actually out there who's been affected by the residential school or does know someone, even those who are in the chat room, please call in and tell us your story, even if how you were brought up. I would like to talk to other people that have actually been affected by it or those who actually want to share a Métis story. We'd love to hear from you. I'm hinting to the chat room, the BBS Radio chat room, so please call us. And the toll-free number for this show is, under the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. That's 877 876-5227. And in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And those international callers, now sometimes the international callers also come from other countries that also been affected by possibly residential schools or assimilation, or they're of genocidal issues the same way, similar way. And the phone number is 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. If you felt that you've been harmed in any way in the past, when you're or anyone in your family or you know someone, please give us a call. Also, if you want to share a story with us, or even if those are non-Native people out there who want to even ask a question or to share something, please give us a call, and we want to hear from you, because we have approximately 20 minutes to receive your calls. Okay? Now, have you taken a deep breath, my friend?
Yeah, I really like to just continue on with some of the stuff that it's really hard for me to deal with.
Yeah.
And, you know, after listening to my mom's story, we applied for the settlement agreement, and she kept getting some correspondence back, and one of the correspondence back, because I've got it all here writing in front of me, and it says, I'm going to read this letter to you, because this is the information that, this is why I'm having a very difficult time to, Dear Georgina Haggerty, thank you for your application, A Common Experience Under the Indian Residential School Settlement, received on the 11th, 2007. We regret to inform you that your application cannot be approved, as the school indicated in your application was not recognized under the settlement agreement. And then it says, should you wish to apply to have the school recognized under the settlement agreement, go to the website, submit it, and find. And so we did that, and of course, then we got some more correspondence back, and it says, request for institutional to be added to the settlement agreement. Request, thank you for your correspondence, in which you requested the Good Shepherd Schools located in Winnipeg, Manitoba, the proposed institution be added to the list contained in the residential settlement agreement dated May 8, 2006. And they said that they accepted the school under the settlement agreement, and then she receives another letter back, again rejecting her, that they needed more information. And what really annoys me is they all have the records, and what really annoys me is it's called red taping you. They're just hoping the government is, and this is what's so upsetting about it, Derek, and it really is, they're just giving them a token of a few thousand dollars per person. You know, but the lifetime of hurt and anger, and their culture, our culture has been destroyed, our lives have been destroyed, and here they're just token giving us a few thousand dollars to make a settlement feel that should be it, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, but you know what really, and I'm going to say this, you know, that, and I hope some of the government officials are really listening to this, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, you've now apologized, pay up. You have everybody's names on the list. You can lie to the people saying that these names have been destroyed, files have been destroyed. I don't believe it. I think most of the money that they're going to pay is going to go into administrations, and the only ones that are going to make any money out of this is the administrators of the Indian Residential School. They're not going to pay a nickel to anybody that actually went to these schools.
Well, here's a story, Dale, and this is actually, think about it, this is true. And it goes from the white government's hands back into the white government's hands because they have to pay someone to send the money to you. It costs money to do the process. By the time you receive the check to have it cashed, it takes a non-native person to actually cash and it'll charge you more. So it goes right back to them. You lose approximately about maybe 30 to 40% of that $60 million out of the 600 tribes. I don't think that even includes the Métis.
No, not at all.
Just tribes.
Yeah. And that's the part about it. This is another thing that really annoys me is.
Is Dale with you? Little Dale with you?
No, she's not.
If you get a chance, big guy, take the number. Write down the number 60 million on a calculator. And divide it into 600, and that'll tell you how much money each tribe will receive in the benefits. 60 million into 600.
Yeah. Is there money for the Métis, or is it all going to go into the?
It's supposed to be for the Métis as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's supposed to go to the Métis societies, Métis organizations, or the Métis people themselves individually.
Yeah, I see.
Like I said, that's why I was asked to be part of this program as the Indian Residential School Survivor Society as a Métis elder, so then I can help our people, because there is not a Métis elder in this program. And so, when I was very fortunate and very, I guess to say, honored being asked to do this, maybe because of my knowledge of what I do as far as a counselor is concerned, but I guess all this combined together is going to help others. And they did send me some people, I guess you'd say, to test me, so to speak, to see if my knowledge is, you know, would help benefit them, and that's why they chose me, because they do a lot of major deep research before they decide to take you on. And like I said, I feel very honored by this organization to offer me this job when they need me. I'm on call when I'm needed. So say first person like yourself. So you're dealing with issues. The organization, you call the organization, they call me up and I go see you, so to speak. If there's anybody close by to you, we're still working on all the other glitches to get how someone be closer to help you go through the same healing process. It's going to take time, but all that will start to happen. And it's called a 10-year or 5-year or 10-year program, so it's something that's ongoing. It's not something that's temporary. And that's the important part. Now, as far as your mom is concerned, when the government came back and told you that they can't find nothing on it, they can't find it. Well, you know, I asked that very same question in the meeting today, and I was told that two things you ask, is that building torn down? Because if the building's torn down, then they can't find the registry of it.
Yeah,
and they're trying to downsize what is it considered as a residential school or foster home.
But you know what, Derek? This school has not been ripped down.
But all residential schools were foster homes.
Yeah, and the funny part about this is the government of Saskatchewan is supposed to be releasing all the documents of all the kids that were apprehended and taken into custody and to care, and I'm still waiting to find out where I can find this list people. But you see, they use the residential schools to target Métis families because the government of Canada was still upset with the Métis people because of the resistance and the 1885. And they were targeting all kinds of Métis families to doing that. And, you know, yeah, I know that for a fact because a friend of mine says that there was probably the first Canada-wide warrant for arrest for the people that were involved in the resistance at Batoche, and our family name was on it, and the Villeneuve family was on that list of they were after my great grandfather as part of the resistance. And so they were very much targeting all as many as they could Métis families that was in the area. And I'm not to say that they were a lot of families that they probably targeted. And today there's not a lot to be said. Like I said, my aunts are all passed away. I managed to talk to one of my aunts just prior to a year before her passing away, and she says that she was in a convent in Saskatchewan, in Saskatoon, but, you know, she was, my aunt was, God bless her soul, she probably drank herself to death because of all the hurt that had happened. I knew she had three great kids, they're my cousins, and but her marriage was a very difficult marriage, and lots of things in our family. Even my auntie Lillian, we don't even know nothing about her. How many kids did she have? Where did she live? You know, she's gone too, and of course, Agnes, there is, we don't know nothing about her either. It's, you know, and of course my Uncle Billy, and we've never seen him at all, so none of the family has. So, yeah. You know, the government has apologized for stuff like this, but then, you know, they're using the red tape to hold on to the money, and it's like I said, it's not all about the money. But I mean, if they have admit that they've got wrong, then and start opening those books, you can't do anything wrong. But I guess the really concern maybe is because there is if you didn't apply to the Indian Residential School, you could, you know, get a private lawyer and go after the government and sue them on their own terms. But unfortunately, my mom didn't need to do that, or she was not interested in doing that. She was more interested in the apology rather than the money. And yeah. And it's me that's actually going after the money for her to help her to get on with the last of her with her life, and you know, she needs a walker. She could use a motorized cart to get her around. Her dental could be done a little bit better. This is where the money's going to go to. You know, it's, you know, what else can you ask for? I don't know. Me personally, the money isn't the issues. They need to take care of their health issues. They need to take care of, you know, their living conditions. This is where the money should be going to. And they're only going to be survivors. This is where the money should go. Most of the people that are going to receive the money don't know what to do with the money because they never had a lot of money.
Well, I got cousins. I got a lot of cousins in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
is the major Métis territory, just as much as Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
My cousin, one cousin, we'll say Debbie, she was having difficulty getting funding from even her own Métis organization because, as far as they were concerned, she wasn't Métis enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got some politicians, even in our own community, that's defining what they call a Métis.
Yeah.
Another category, another situation. We've got so many, and then I have another cousin here that's on, bless her heart, she's on every week, listening to our show dedicatingly, my show and yours as well as yours, and I will name her name because she's on site, her name is Joanne. And, you know, herself being of Métis blood, and she's always likes to tell her story one day, Alexia hoped she could, but she's got a relative on the phone and won't get off the phone. We're hoping that she would call in and tell her story. But, you know, like, everyone goes through this kind of stuff, and it's so common that they're trying to let the public know, let the world know that, you know, we've all dealt with some sort of a hardship in life. And, yeah, I mean, like, let's talk about there was drug abuse, alcohol abuse. There was even people go through suicides. Kids would actually commit suicide because they couldn't handle what would happen to them physically. We won't have to go that deep into that far, but it goes to the point that people put themselves in deep depression, nervous breakdowns, family dysfunctions of all sorts, and it affects everyone, even the children. I've had people that come for me for counseling, and there was one particular client that came to see me one time, more than one woman, but one particular woman came to see me, and she said to me that she herself was raped by one of the priests, one of the Catholic priests. And that, she was young herself, she was 12, 13, and she actually had that child, the priest's child. And this is reminding her the rest of her life that she, you know, she loves that child, but this reminds the rest of her life that she has to remember what happened to her when she was young.
Yeah.
And she's a grandmother now.
Yeah.
Now, her children are affected by it because the grandchildren don't know, because if she told her grandchildren the story, that they would hate all the churches. You know, it's not the idea of the church itself that caused the pain, the harm. It's who represented that church. You know, no matter who represented the organization, that's the abusers.
Yeah.
Whoever abused those kids, whoever abused those persons individually, that's the abuser, not the specific location, because a lot of people that are Aboriginal go to church even to this day, even though they do have reminders that, you know, whether it was Catholic, whether it was Anglican, Protestant, Unity. Every other church apologized, as well as Harper, but one church did not apologize, and that's the Catholic Church. And even there was even a chief that demanded that even the Pope apologize for what had happened, and the Pope refused to apologize because they felt themselves that we were still the heathens, even to this day.
Yeah.
So the
well,
thing
Derek,
is that
I know I just got to say this before you, before we go offline here. I'd like to really continue this with you, Derek. I'd like to make a personal invitation for you to come on my show and to continue this conversation on July the 4th, and I will dedicate my show to the residential school system and try to see if we can find some answers and hear some stories. And by this time, you will already be in your position of jobs and maybe can tell us a few things. What do you think, Derek? Are you interested?
I'm all for it, my friend.
There you go. So, well, I really appreciate you me talking about this because it really is, it's made me feel better, you know, talking about it, you know. But there is issues that I need to talk to. And where I live up here, I don't have that opportunity. Nobody's come up to the Clearwater area where there's about 6,000 people in the area and has made any offering to the First Nation people. Well, they're the First Nation people. What about the Métis people that might have went through all this?
Let me tell you, my friend, when I actually was in the meeting today, and we even talked about this, and it was said that a lot of the people in other territories, say, for example, Burns Lake, British Columbia, way back in those territories, those people hardly come into town. A lot of people are actually secluded. They don't get television or radio hardly. They just live on their own, so they don't even know that Harper even apologized. So there are people out there from all across Canada that still have not even been recognized as an existence in those 100,000-plus people. So it's going to take time, whether it's Métis or First Nations or Inuits. It all is affected like I said, it's going to take time. It's going to take a couple of years at least for everybody to realize that the apology was taking place. So it's going to, like I said, it's going to take time. We're coming to a close. Dale, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Derek. It's been a very good show.
And we're going to have a lot of fun talking again. Folks, it's been great to have you listening in. This is Derek Whitesky Cloud, and you're listening to Between Two Worlds, and you're watching me on Between Two Worlds on Ustream.tv, off of BBSRadio.com. We're being picked up by 11 viewers. Absolutely fabulous, because this is actually, like I said, this is our TV program has been going for, I'd say about a month now. So as we keep on going, we're trying to improve our audio more, video, visuals. So looking forward to talking to you folks next week. So in the meantime, in between time, this is Derek Whitesky Cloud. And we're coming to a close, folks. See you next week. Talk to you next week. Take care, folks. Be safe out there. Bye.